All right, and hello. Good to see you guys, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome in. This is the Red Bird Reboot. I'm Blake Murphy on Twitter at BlakeMurphy7. Here to talk everything Arizona Cardinals. Joined today. Now, Marcos, you have to remind me, how do you pronounce your last name? Just because I don't want to butcher it.
Oh, it's Labrada.
Labrada, yeah. I was going to say, it's like LeBron James then, so it's got to know. We're going to have great content that's going to be here. Pancake Soul or Soul Pancake, much easier to go by for the most part. But yeah, we've got some Cardinals football to talk here for this episode. We're also going to break down a bit of film, which is going to be super exciting. But the first thing I wanted to ask is, how are you doing, Marcos? And tell us a little bit about yourself since you're a first-time guest on the reboot.
Well, as everybody knows, yesterday we just got beat up by a storm that just came out of nowhere, so dealing with the whole cleanup of that. So I'm a Phoenix native, born and raised here. I was a Cardinals fan since the Anquan Boldin draft. I wasn't really familiar with football before that, and so that was the first time I ever took interest in anything. It was actually the draft that got me interested and wanting to follow the Cardinals. And I work standard warehouse job. I've been there for 5 years. So basically my life revolves around just going to work, trying to be a good dad to my kids. And whenever I get a chance, get a few hours in a film study every single game. And I'm excited to see what we have coming in the season. Of course, if NFL Plus lets us do it the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's always one thing every year it feels like, is that people are waiting to see that coach's film go up. And then when it does get there, it's just some sort of a mess. Yeah, it makes our jobs at least a little bit more difficult to be able to go and analyze. But let's open up and talk a bit about what we're seeing with the Arizona Cardinals so far. It's been obviously a restart to the entire team. This is part of why actually the show became new branding, decided to call it the Redbird Reboot, because much like the Arizona Cardinals, this podcast was also rebooting. Wanted to at least ask you and get some of your takes on what we've seen with the Arizona Cardinals when it comes to what Monty and Jonathan Gannon have done post-draft. We've seen a lot of people talk about their draft, people who liked the draft, what they did setting up for 2024. What have we seen at least from the training camp until now that you've liked so far, or just anything else that you've done? What are your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts is, I've kind of gone away from trying to make any type of decision-making yet about both Jonathan Gannon and Monty Austin. For obviously we won't know what the results of their moves are until maybe a few years down the line. And obviously we could get a good look at the draft this year to see if the returns and all of the trades that we made, they have a positive outcome. One of the things that I questioned was just the Paris Johnson pick, but aside from that, I mean, they are kind of signifying that, hey, we want to see if we draft a guy who's known as the best offensive lineman, if he could take over long term. I think that's the plan, at least, because DJ Humphries, as we know, had his injury history. But I really liked what they did with the picks of Michael Wilson. I'm really high on him. And of course, Ketrell Clark, I'm his biggest fan. So going forth, those two are just my top picks. And as far as Paris Johnson is concerned, I want to see consistency with him. So I'm excited to see where his learning curve goes. I'm not expecting him to be an all pro from day one, but I'm expecting him to get out there, get his feet wet, and just start improving from there. So I like those. I don't necessarily agree with some of the moves that Monty has made, but it's kind of signaling that they are going into a new direction with a new era. So if that's what it takes, as far as he has it all across the board where, the culture said we're not going to tolerate bad performances and stuff. If you're on this team, we need you to give it your all. Then you know what? I'm going to be all for it.
Yeah, I think that so far what we've seen is that they've wanted to kind of have a veteran presence, but also be able to go a bit younger with some of what they've been able to do. I'm going to pull up real quick with some of their depth chart, just so we'll be able to see. Let me see if I can get one of the areas at least with that. But one of the things I thought was very interesting about what Monty Asenfort was able to do was that he's been able to back up a lot of these young players with veteran starters. So as you can see here, you've got a young guy with Clayton Toon. They bring in a veteran in Joshua Dobbs. You end up with trying to bring in a veteran in Marlon Mack. You have one in James Conner. You then have the young guys in Keontae Ingram and Amari DiMercato making the roster over the veteran Tyson Williams. Same thing with the receivers this year. You've got a veteran in Zach Pascal. Michael Wilson is there. The biggest moves I think that they made post-draft that I think we'll be able to see have been Jeff Swaim, who's probably going to be a starter at tight end, you'd assume, for the Cardinals, depending on the status of Zach Ertz. And then, of course, we've also been able to see them have a few injuries, unfortunately. Several players went to IR, and they went out and brought in some players in Carter O'Donnell, Tristan Colon, and I believe Ilm Manning as well was a tackle that they liked. Lot of claims that they made on the offensive line trying to bring in. You can see now they've got technically four centers on the roster, one, of course, going to IR. They didn't do as much, I think, with the actual defense itself. Really, what they did do is they kind of kept it at par and brought in a Kayvon Wallace. Now, obviously, this is after the trades of Josh Jones and Isaiah Simmons, and then bringing in Josh Dobbs. We'll get to that in a second, but is there anything else that you feel like as far as where the roster stands heading into week one that you either liked or felt the Cardinals should have done a little bit more?
I don't like the Josh Jones trade, mostly because of the second half of last year. He showed that not only could he be a consistent tackle, but he can, like, if you keep him at his natural position at left tackle, he could eventually take over the position. I really was hoping that, like, once we drafted Paris Johnson, that meant that DJ Humphries is probably going to be either, you know, because we all thought they were just going to start, like, you know, accumulating draft picks and whatnot, and then just getting younger and start, like, you know, getting away from the last regime. Well, DJ Humphries is part of that last regime. Mm-hmm. And Josh Jones, we know he hasn't had the best development, especially since he's had to sit behind like Calvin Beecham all those years, and of course DJ Humphries. But once DJ got hurt, look, we got Josh Jones, and he played admirably for the amount of time that he's had and snaps. So I didn't like that at all. I don't know what they were trying to figure out with that, but DJ Humphries is now the left tackle for the future. Maybe Paris Johnson can push him out of the left tackle position. That would at least justify the move up to get him. I mean, you'd want him to be your franchise left tackle. Of course, I'm never going to be okay with the Isaiah Simmons pick. I think, the sending him off for a seventh round pick when, like, you're basically signaling that, like, well, we don't want him on our roster. So he performed badly. Let's just go ahead and ship him out and, you know, send him off to New York. And I wish him the best. I think for a player like him to go to the Wink Martindale, aggressive type of crazy mad scientist mindset of Wink Martindale when it comes to blitz packages, that's a match made in heaven for him. So we'll see how that comes out. But I felt like if we would have moved some pieces around our defense, then maybe that would have worked out better to be able to keep him. I don't like Keytrell being on the outside. I think he can hang in the outside, I'm sure, but I was picturing him as our slot corner. Then that pushed Isaiah Simmons to be that dime backer that he should have been, that third linebacker, but it just didn't work out. So, oh well, wish him luck, and you know, oh well. And for the rest of, you know, what's going on, I don't get the Josh Dobbs pickup at all.
Yeah, the biggest thing I think that a lot of people have said is, if the Cardinals were going to make this move, why wasn't it done earlier? What was kind of the point behind all of it? It results in Colt McCoy being cut from the team. And a lot of people immediately looked at that and said that the Cardinals, this is a tank move. You're taking the most experienced quarterback off of your roster. Now, that being said, for people who attended Cardinals training camp at University, or I should say no, State Farm Stadium, people who went and saw most of the offseason, Colt McCoy had been splitting first team reps and a lot of days getting a lot of rest. He had issues as far as with his shoulder He didn't come up necessarily on the injury report because there isn't an injury report in preseason. But like first practice I went to, you're seeing the team do their walkthrough, kind of just the typical installation. Colt McCoy gets the ball, drops back, and then points. Doesn't throw, doesn't actually use his arm, just points to where the ball would be going. So you can tell at least from that, and then seeing over time, I think the Vikings practices where we would see several times that he would just be trying to get the ball a bit further downfield. And it was like late Peyton Manning in like the last year of his career where he led the league in pick sixes. Ball just would float easy for defenses to pick off. Yeah, it just looked like he was done out there. And so I think a lot of people were looking at this and arguing that maybe it's not cutting Colt McCoy that I think would be the move that people are saying for the Cardinals trying to race to the bottom, which we, I don't think any Cardinals fan has agreed with that being the approach. But it does feel like that if that was where they were with Colt McCoy and either they trusted him or that they didn't bring in someone up until Josh Dobbs, then it really makes it feel like that either they whiffed on that with Colt McCoy or that they just really were not able to bring in another veteran quarterback at the end of the day. And I think that just speaks to the state of this Arizona Cardinals roster in a lot of ways. Steve Keim had tied Colt McCoy to a multi-year deal. They had to go out and get another rookie in Clayton Tune just to have someone with a bit more physical talent than Trace McSorley, who we all saw him last year in the Buccaneers game, and he was very quickly moved on from for David Blau, who the team did release also. At the end of the day, I think that the biggest thing that they did was they at least are going to give themselves a better chance, I think, to win with Josh Dobbs and Clayton Tune than I think it would have been with Colt McCoy. I think we would have talked about Colt McCoy being benched or let go after week one. And as a result, I really can't fault the Cardinals for the move that they've made. It's just a bummer that it's come to this point in their season. And as we've seen with Kyler Murray on the PUP list, there's going to be a lot of questions about how many games this team can win, no matter how the rest of their roster is set up, if their quarterback position is not able to produce.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. Just like you mentioned, like, I don't know what direction they were trying to go with Colt McCoy when it came to, like, they knew what they had in him. It doesn't take much to see in a practice that, like, he kind of has a foot out already. And physically speaking, he's just not the same that he was even in the past 2 years. So that's astonishing that he was out there just pointing where he's throwing and not actually throwing the ball. So at that point, you just kind of look at that and you say, why is he even here?
Yeah, poor. I feel almost bad for it because, like, I think the team, out of the respect, the level, people always rave about Colt's character. He's like a coach on the field. It did feel like, in a lot of ways, that this was going to be his last year regardless. He had already been calling games for USFL. He'd already been on the Underdog Fantasy. He's got a new podcast set up that he's going to be on. So you already felt like that there's that post-career media leap that players can often take. Some of them will do it while they're still active. Others will end up kind of reaching that point of their career where they know it's about time to take that next step. I did want to at least also check on one other thing. I think that a lot of Cardinals fans have been wondering about has been, with this team, what are you going to see, at least from the, not just the offensive weapons, but from the approach in general? How much of this is going to be setting things up for Kyler Murray? How many things are going to be different? There's kind of an interesting angle for Cardinals as far as we're either seeing them adopt a brand new system. It's much more of that Kyle Shanahan running a lot of zone read off tackle, using a strong play action game from under center. And then there's other areas of adjusting to the players that you have. And some of that we've seen where the Cardinals on the defensive side have still been running a 3-4 defense, having four people, at least for the most part, as far as whether that typical linebacker spot. We've seen a couple of the looks where every team you can argue is hybrid, but really they haven't made that entirely full shift to having two stand-up defensive linemen in the middle of the field, kind of lining up at those three techniques. You've got a full-on nose tackle in Lucky Foe, too, who's finally maybe in his natural position, and I think that's a good adjustment for the coaching staff to have. To what degree do you think coaches for this Cardinals team are adjusting to their players, and in what cases do you think they maybe haven't adjusted enough to some of their strengths, perhaps in the likes of a Josh Jones and an Isaiah Simmons?
Well, at least speaking from the offensive side, they are, like, as we've seen, they are dedicated to having more like I formation and like just single back formation from under center. So they're already kind of like implementing that so that like the players that were, you know, that were here last year, like Hollywood Brown, for example, he's played in the air raid system. And then he went over to Baltimore where they adopted that heavy personnel. That's all 22 personnel, 21 personnel and stuff. So he's kind of going back into that style per se, like saying like, you know, having more heavier personnel and him being possibly the single wide receiver or one of the wide receivers on the opposite side of the formation as the number one, you know, on one side, and you have your number one on the other side. I would hope that would be Michael Wilson. So what I've tried to implement in people is that if we're talking about how we have to set up for Kyler Murray, which is obviously when he comes back, he's coming back. He's, you know, he's taking the whole reason as to why we're even shifting offensive wise is because we want to see if Kyler Murray, if this is a better system for him. And with that being said, getting him out in space is one of the things that hasn't been something that was that we really saw as Cardinals. We never saw him at the boot, like, you know, like on a bootleg. We never really saw him that consistently having to throw to like a streaking slot receiver running across the formation or a tight end. So those type of plays haven't been in our repertoire. So now we have to start thinking about those type of designs and how he can adapt. Obviously, we know where he's mobile. So that's a strength right there. So getting him mobile is the thing. One thing that I will tell people is like, don't expect for this offensive shift to happen instantaneously when it comes to Kyler Murray, because it's more of an easing into the offense, because nothing beats live reps. Nothing beats getting out there and actually executing in a game. So you might see still a lot of shotgun formations, but shotgun formations with an outside zone perspective. And that goes for like blocking wise. So our offensive linemen will have to adopt that system. And we're just looking for improvement at that point. We're trying to see the growth. We're going to see the numbers go up steadily for like under center formations, because when you turn your back to the defense and you're a quarterback, like that takes what, like a half a second to not be able to collect knowledge, especially since you're under center. It's harder to read where all the defenders are because you're more focused on when you turn around, where were they at before you lose that sight, and where are they going to be at now when you turn around? And so that's going to be a major, like, it's going to be kind of like a shock to Kyler Murray to get used to that. And because we all know he's always been a shotgun, surveys the field, looks left, looks right. Okay, this defender's right here. Oh, they're pulling this guy down. So let me go ahead and, you know, shift my players, shift protection, make it, you know, we know that. So now doing that heavily, well, it's going to be an adoption. So for everybody, we are looking for growth. We're not looking for him. If he comes out and throws for 300 yards and three touchdowns, great. But if he doesn't, like, that doesn't mean like, hey, he's already not adapting to the system. We need to ease up into that. He's going to probably be handing the ball off quite a bit. So that's on offense. So now on defense, we have seen more of a 3-4 style. I think part of that was because of the personnel. And I'm not – okay, so there's this rumor that apparently back in with the Eagles, Jonathan Gannon wasn't the person calling the defense, truthfully. I don't know if you heard about that rumor about Vic Fangio pulling the strings.
I think that was a big part of what a lot of Eagles fans had said, and that was one of the cases of knowing how involved he was with the game plan leading up to that Super Bowl. I know, at least from what we've talked about, somebody we've had on their podcast before, Benjamin Albright, his sources said that Fangio was much more trying to help the offense plan for what the defense of the Chiefs was going to throw at them. But when it comes down to it, he's now a defensive coordinator again. He's with the Miami Dolphins. It is one of those things, at least, of where you can see with how Jonathan Gannon leaving the Eagles, and they're basically not sad that he's gone. Unlike, you know, Cardinals fans, when Todd Bowles left a few years ago, there was a sadness that I think a lot of fans felt when he was leaving, because he'd done such a great job with not as much to work with in 2014, but definitely something I think it's always going to be at the mind of Cardinals fans and Eagles fans with that Super Bowl. Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, like you know the reaction when he left. Eagles fans were like, well, all right, see you later. Like, we don't care. Like, and I've already illustrated that, like, in the Super Bowl, it wasn't all Jonathan Gannon's fault. It was a full team issue. Of course, if that fumble doesn't get returned for a touchdown, we're talking about, like, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl. So that was on offense. Also, they had the three and out. But the preface is we're going to see what Jonathan Gannon really brings to a defense. So if he's setting up this personnel as in like he's going to have a nose tackle, they're going to be in like a bare front where they have like the two, they have the zero, they have the three techs, and then they have the five techniques on the outside, five man front, maybe have one stand up like line off outside linebacker. I would imagine that would be switching around between Cam Thomas and I like what they're doing with Zaven Collins, so I'll just go ahead and throw that out. That I like him at outside linebacker. So yeah, they're gonna have that front. And my dream scenario would be like have Kittrell in the slot, but I think there's a chance he might be going to the outside. I don't know what the rumors or what the talks are about when it comes to our corners, but hey, he has been playing on the outside a lot, so there's a possibility he'll start on the outside. And then you have your two high, which, you know, it always struck me as weird that they try to implement Isaiah Simmons at free safety, knowing mm-hmm. that you have Jalen Thompson and Buda Baker out there, especially since, you know, you signed Buda Baker to that. You gave him a little bit more of that extra money. So having him back in that two high, I like that. And so far as we know, if this is a Vic Fangio type of system, it's not going to look too different from the Vance Joseph system, because Vance Joseph ran a lot of cover. He ran a lot of cover three, but he also yeah. ran a lot of quarters. So we know, because we would always see the safeties up high. And but he also had a blitz heavy mentality. And what I like from what I'm seeing on defense so far is they're not getting baited too much and trying to like go for the big play. There's a few third and longs where they just stayed put, guarded the sticks. And I'm like, That's sound defense right there. So I'm glad to see that. So far, I'm welcome to any change. As you know, I was a big Vance Joseph critic. So
yeah, I really feel like in a lot of ways, Cardinals fans, like as you said, last year it was a combination of organizational failure, because whether it was the general manager and the team, or just the front office and the coaches just not seeming to be on the same page. Some of it, like you said, was the unusual nature of bringing in a Cliff Kingsbury and then Vance Joseph essentially having to adapt into a way of trying to be able to use his double A-gap scheme with these linebackers who could both blitz and cover, while also having to work through a slew of corner injuries in the 2019 and 2022 seasons. Especially once Byron Murphy left, you could see that the team went from using him primarily in man coverage, using a lot of zone coverage otherwise, to just having to run cover three for almost the rest of the season, essentially saying we just don't want to give up the big play, and then bringing as much of he could with blitz pressure with Zach Allen and JJ Watt, trying to be able to disrupt from different angles. And that really was where their defense unfortunately got burned a lot, was over the middle of the field. And some of that, of course, as we said, is when you take players and try to kind of push them into that mold of being this three down linebacker, if that's not their strength or skill set, then that's one of the reasons why we saw struggles. And I think that by going, not necessarily saying adopting the rest of the league's ideas because it works, but I think it's more that since this is where the league is going, there's proven players who can fill and perform in those roles, like you said. Like we've already seen Kaiser White brought over from the Eagles. He was much more of the weak side linebacker. He's moved into more of that middle linebacker role, helping call the defense. And we've already seen like he's out there being able to make plays because he's able to essentially kind of fill in those gaps for up the middle or being able to play well in coverage. And I think that's something that at least for the most part, this coaching staff seems like that it at least is an improvement, if just because the general manager and the front office will be on the same page. We've seen Josh Jones go from being a right tackle to a right guard to being a left tackle to then being a swing tackle who maybe people talked about starting at left guard to now being kind of the Houston Texans' answer to having so many injuries at their tackle spot on the right tackle side, especially. I think that a lot of the questions now that have popped up recently have been just from some of the areas about Jonathan Gannon's personality. Questions about, like, if it's cheesy things he's saying, if it's just this awkwardness. So far, from what we've at least seen on the field, it does feel, at least for the most part, like, even if this Cardinals team is not as successful this first year, it does feel like that it may not necessarily be from a coaching or a scheme perspective. It may just be ultimately from a talent perspective. And so I'm very curious to see what the staff is going to do with the new players that they'll have on this roster, as well as for the next few seasons, since this, being honest, is a Cardinals team that we talk about building a foundation and we talk about building a house. Well, this is essentially a Cardinals team that's very unique in that when you come into this house, you got to basically say, hey, this kitchen, it's great. We've got Kyler Murray. He's locked up on a long-term deal. He's got proven production in the National Football League. There's maybe not necessarily top five, top 10, as far as I think kind of the range that you might see him be at. Some people may have wanted him to be a higher level. Some people maybe look at that and just say, hey, look at the second half of the seasons. This may be on a lower level. Either way, you know, that kitchen is really nice. It just got redone. But whether it's the rest of the walls, the house, what we've seen the Cardinals do is kind of realize that in order to get this house in good working order, you got to kind of go to the foundation, make sure that foundation is solid, and see that that's the case first. And to that degree, if you want to call that tanking, I think that there's a lot of NFL fans who ultimately would prefer to say tanking over rebuild, because it's a bit juicier. It's a little bit more like, ooh, this team is going out to intentionally lose. It's a little bit easier to say that than it is to say, hey, we're going to spend a year leveraging, paying off, you know, debt and making sure that we do all of these renovations before we open up our houses for more guests to come in. That just sounds so boring, you know, Marcos. It sounds boring to me. Do you think that this is more of an actual tanking effort by Arizona for the future? Or have you seen signs of this being more of that rebuilding, renovating process and taking over from Steve Keim?
I'm seeing more of the rebuild. Of course, people can speculate. We don't know for sure. I'll make that call like five games or six games in the season when we're losing we're having obvious losses, then you can kind of pick it out. You can kind of say, okay, well then that's the direction they're going. But for the moves they've made, I don't see that. Even though like the national media has speculated so far, like they've talked about, would it even be smart if they even bring back Kyler Murray? I'm like, well, we don't know what his time frame looks like. Yeah, sure, it takes like about a year to be able to recover from that, but we don't know what's really going to go on. We know that he's not going to be playing for the first four games. That's what we know. That's what's set in stone. But after that, we don't know what the intentions are. So I'm not going to make an assessment of like, hey, they're clearly tanking by the moves, because some of the players that they had, it wasn't like they traded away Josh Jones and had nobody at left tackle. We have DJ Humphries. Same thing goes with Isaiah Simmons. We didn't trade him away and not have any person that can, like, you know, at least play not his position, but like play in the position where if you trade away an Isaiah Simmons, this defense automatically looks like top, like bottom, like five or whatever. Like we can't say that,
right?
Because he was already playing an unnatural position where he was already at. So like the bar was set in the same spot. So with those trades,
it's harder to go lower sometimes, at least when you're already at one of the lowest points that you can be at as a franchise, having four wins last year. And being perfectly honest, one of those wins against the Oakland Raiders was defense went and locked the Raiders down, and you ended up seeing a lucky turnover at the very last part of the game after Kyler Murray runs around, scores some crazy two-point conversions, and then, of course, a fumble by Hunter Renfrow when the Raiders were all about to be in field goal range gets you that extra win. Otherwise, it really was a team that had been kind of held together with duct tape and one-year deals. Cardinals coaches and front office got the extension, and then it felt like the team, unfortunately, just ended up being at that spot where they had been over-leveraged, and as a result, they've had to be able to cut back. It's just been a result of being way over leverage, I think, that's led this to being, instead of maybe a 1 year type of turnaround, I think a lot of people are wondering, does Kyler come back, gets used to the system, Cardinals make some draft picks, get some cap room? Is this more of a 1 year kind of flip in 2024, or could it be a two years, maybe even 3 years type of flip? That's something I think we'll get to learn a lot about that, like you said, in the first 4 weeks, because we'll find out, how do they look with Kyler Murray? How much does this team need around him? Because as we all know, a quarterback drives his team's success. But at the end of the day, the quarterback is also ultimately reliant on the team around him as well. Quarterbacks can't block or catch passes. So ultimately, if you're seeing that be the case, that's where it ends up being tough for the quarterback. Now, I do want to make sure, before we kind of get to the end of our show, let's go over some film study. I know that you've wanted to go over some areas in Isaiah Simmons, see some different plays that have been there. I think that this is one of the tools we've wanted to use, as far as with having a live streaming version, at least with the Redbird reboot. So if we can be descriptive for the audio listeners on the podcast of like some of the plays or what kind of is happening, I think that'd be best. But I want you to go ahead and share at least some of the stuff you've had with the film study and your end and what you've kind of seen that you want to talk about there.
Sweet. I have one play to share with Isaiah Simmons, and we're just going to leave after that. I'm like, that's it with me I'm not saying like, hey Isaiah, I'm done with you. No, I'm saying like, I'm just going to share this video, and it'll kind of put in perception of how I feel like, you know, Isaiah Simmons is not only his development, but how he's seen with the Arizona Cardinals fan base and media. And the rest of them are going to be about Clayton Tune. I'm going to say this right off the bat. I think he should start week one. I don't think there should be any discussion on it. I don't know anything about Josh Dobbs or anything, but I am very impressed with what I've seen from Clayton Tune in that Vikings game.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, why don't you get that pulled up here on your screen so that way we can get that shared, and I'll get that added in here to your stream.
There we go.
Awesome. Yep, let's go.
All right, so this first Isaiah Simmons clip, it's the TD that he per se gave up. So the reason why I'm saying per se is because from the broadcast view, if you watch the same play, this is where you saw Patrick Mahomes scramble and kind of get loose to the right side of the field, which is the field side, which is up here. So he buys the time, and you see, what was his name? Justin Watson, I believe.
Watson 84.
Not sure.
Yep.
Yeah, 84. So he runs kind of like he looks like he's going to run like a corner route, but he stems it to the inside. So the issue right here is that these two DBs down at the bottom side of the screen, they miscommunicate on this type of coverage. So what it looks like to me, it looks like quarter, half from this look. Obviously, I'm spitballing right here because like, you can't really tell until you actually see the play develop. So you have your Isaiah Simmons as your single high right here, covering what I would say the field side, which is the bigger side. You have these two defenders over here. They're supposed to be dropping into quarters up here. Like, you know, just basically, that's why it's called quarter, half. Or you can call it half, quarter, depending on, half, quarter, depending on which side you're looking at the field. So this could possibly be half, quarter. Anyway,
so you got one half of the field is going to be set up where it's going to be mostly more of a zone type of coverage. Your goal, at least ultimately, is going to be, you want to make sure that you're dropping into that coverage to where if guys are going to be running some routes into the end zone, you don't want to be able to get it where there's essentially a running back is able to run up the middle, or that you're at least having a man who's able to be there in coverage. If someone does streak over to the end zone, you'll be able to pick it up, because this is at least, I believe, which is this first or second down? I think this is actually second down, unless I'm mistaken.
I'm not 100% sure. I should write that in my, I always told myself, put in the description. So two of these defenders are supposed to be guarding these quarter deep parts of the field. But either way, these two defenders have a miscommunication. So let's go ahead and play it. So, of course, you see the release. You see at the very beginning, What is his name?
Christian Matthew. And it looks like they're running a scissors concept, which is scissors. You think of the two of them crossing together. Mm-hmm. That's where one receiver runs to the outside, who is inside, and the other one runs from the inside to the outside. And when you're running that against a man coverage look, it really can mix things up. If it's against zone, you're usually just able to pass it off to the next person and continue. Like you said, that looks like that there may be a mental error on this play.
So you already see him signaling at the beginning of the snap. So right over here, he's what looks like press coverage. He's signaling as in like, hey, if the switch off goes around, he's supposed to cover this defender. And honestly, I'm not even sure what's going on over here because you see his eyes kind of pointed towards this receiver right here. If they're supposed to switch off, basically you have him following Christian Watson across the field. If they're supposed to like signal to each other, we're going to banjo this. He's supposed to take on this receiver. Of course, Christian Watson, he's supposed to take on the outside receiver, the one that's going, the new number one, basically going behind the scissors concept. So as you can see, they both kind of lose communication. He bails into his deep, whatever he's bailing to, because he's trying to keep eyes on this receiver right here. I forgot what his name is.
Antonio Hamilton is 33. Yep. And I wonder how much of it is, if it's a stacked, I think this is a good question, how much of it's, like you said, a stacked concept where he's in the zone. You can see at least how there's the guy that's being carried at least across the flat in the middle. I should say the middle of the field, at least in that long route. You've got Hamilton is basically watching him and trying to leverage between him and Justin Watson. But you can finish the play and see where the deep coverage goes to Isaiah Simmons on that.
Yeah, so he kind of I'm not sure where his eyes are, but you can see how his reaction is. He kind of like gets caught off guard right here because he's probably not expecting that crosser by Justin Watson. So when we look at it again, he has eyes on him. He's looking at the quarterback, and then he has eyes on him again. Like, whoa, whoa, where's the coverage for this? I do think that he was possibly looking at this flat defender, but you can see that this linebacker already has him covered. So it kind of surprised them, of course, bails out, makes the throw. So when you look at this from the broadcast view, you just see the start of the play, Patrick Mahomes, and then you see the touchdown. So that's why I always emphasize the all 22. It's very important to be able to look at that because you see the parts that aren't shown otherwise. And of course, this looks horrendous on Isaiah Simmons' part. But when you look at the all 22, you can see that was miscommunication all parts.
And that's part of where it is for a team. Now, one of the things I do want to say about Simmons, if you want to at least check on that and go back there real quick, at least at the beginning.
Okay.
One of the things I know with Simmons, and this is something that I know when he was drafted, as far as for one of the strengths, but also weaknesses. When you look at how the defender turns, and you can look at Isaiah Simmons, it takes him a quick second to actually turn his body to be able to stay in coverage with Justin Watson.
Right.
So, that's one of the things that's interesting is not only is that a time area, there's another thing where you call flexible hips, which is when you're actually on angled to one side as a runner and then someone crosses like across your face, just like Watson. Your goal as a defender is to be able to quickly move from one side to the other, flip those hips around and be able to keep up in coverage. And one of the things that I think you see between Buda Baker and Isaiah Simmons in coverage is that Buda Baker is much, much easier as far as being able to flip those hips around and then being able to close. When you look at the end of that play, Simmons is still a little bit behind Watson. So I agree with you that I think that it's a couple of different things for here. You've got the communication issues that are there. It looks like things get handed off. Well, maybe Hamilton needed to stay with his defender. I do wonder if he was there in short of making sure that if Mahomes is going to bail to his left, sometimes quarterback responsibility is something that you got a running quarterback like him. You want to make sure that if he bails out to that side and there's no defender. But it does feel like at the same time, it did get picked up by Isaiah Simmons, but he just didn't have that same ability to flip his hips around to be able to get to the guy. And you can see, this is a guy who's a 4.3 athlete. As far as for being a speedster, he should be able to, you'd think once those hips are flipped, be able to keep up with Watson, be able to close in on that play. I think that that's just one of the cases, at least, where you can say that it's both a combination of not the same type of skill set of strengths, while at the same time, it's also a place that we've seen of with at times in coverage, Isaiah has had some weaknesses, I think, as well. And I think that all goes into the evaluation of the player. But I do agree with you that when you're talking about these things, you always want to make sure you take a look at The all 22. I'm going to go and pull up at least another play that we have here just from earlier against Mahomes. This is one that I think is interesting because it shows some of the areas of whether it's instincts or other coverage mix up. This is one of the spots of playing out of structure. So that play was in structure. Everything you're talking about is Patrick Mahomes. He's in the pocket. They run the routes. He delivers the pass. They can see that they're pointing out that they've got a little bit, at least here, of a coverage mix-up right when he gets bails the pocket. They get some pressure on him with Dennis Gardeck. You can see that they've got a couple of players, one watching Patrick Mahomes and then Isaiah Simmons in the middle here. He's also watching Patrick Mahomes. This is where you can see Travis Kelce ends up slipping out right there, and Mahomes just makes an incredible type of throw. That's one of the spots, at least, where the question is sometimes not necessarily who's supposed to cover who, but sometimes you also have to recognize that there's things that Pat Mahomes and other quarterbacks can do that sometimes you just have to shrug your shoulders as a defender with two. You can always go back and after the film say, hey, right here in this spot, you just had Travis Kelce cross your face. He's getting open. Where's Isaiah Simmons' eyes, despite the coverage? He's on the quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. So sometimes you want to say that as far as the coverage, you read the quarterback's eyes, you drop into more of that type of a position where you're able to get in between the quarterback and where their eyes are looking, just because if they're looking for Travis Kelce over the middle, you want to get in the way. He's looking at Patrick Mahomes running to the outside, and you've already got a defender in Keitrell Clark who's over there. Now, normally, this is one of those plays where if you're talking about Colt McCoy or you're talking about another quarterback, they're not going to make this dime pass right over here for the most part across their body, but it's a blown coverage. If Isaiah had gone with Kelce and Mahomes tried to basically float that pass, he would have had to put a lot of juice on it. Kelce even scoops it up off of the ground, and they're able to pick up the first down with a big play, although a nice tackle from Kaiser White there.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that when you're talking about with play is not only is there a lot that goes into defense, one of the things you can at least say is at the end of the day, football players have to have some of those plays they can make that are instinctual. You have to see sometimes the guy like a Tyrann Mathieu back in the day sometimes would recognize and go, oh, hey, this is what I need to go. They love to have those broken plays where Travis Kelce will just go and try to get open. I got to stick with that guy. Instead, you've got four players you can see around here with Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
And he's able to just get a pass to an open Kelce. No one's even looking at him. This is something I think ultimately that talks about with discipline as a defense, where it can be both a learning tool, but also a place where, hey, whatever the case was with that coverage, Simmons, at least in that regard, just was not able to get into the right spot at the right time. That's something that I think you can always say the pros and the cons of each player is that on one hand, you're going to end up seeing struggles. And on the other hand, you're going to end up seeing some little wins that are there. I did want to go over one more play that I had here, since you just went over that touchdown look. Let's go back over here to, so this is one of the plays that gets into close in, at least overall on, this is one of those little smaller swing passes. This was Shane Bichelle. The Chiefs, after Patrick Mahomes are there, start driving down. Just a little drop back, gets the ball out over there pretty quick. You can see at least with Simmons trailing a little bit in coverage as far as the responsibility. You take a look now at the all 22 of that picture here. And let's see, there's the next play. So this is part of just playing the safety position. You can see they've got two receivers stacked up over here. Simmons at least draws the coverage. Obviously, this is with backups. It's not with the starting unit the same way, but this is part of with when I said that I thought Simmons could be a safety. I think even with looking at the strong safety side, ideas of having him in the box, blitzing, there were some areas I felt like that were good strengths of his. And then the hope was that you could develop him in coverage over time with just having some of those instincts. As we can see here, and I believe the play was made to either Sky Moore or Rashee Rice, he ends up getting beaten right from that line off of just a simple step in. And I think this is going back to that flexible hips thing again, at least, you know, you want to make sure that you have guys that are going to get beat, but when they do get beat, you want to recover. We've kind of seen this over the years with him where sometimes on these option routes, guys will sell the inside and then break to the outside. And that's part of where you want to make sure that it's not just about the straight line 40 athleticism, but being able to flip your hips and turn over. So immediately you can see that the receiver gets open and he's just not able to recover. It's not quite like a battleship moving out there. But you can at least just see when it comes to being in coverage, especially against some of these slot guys, that's something at least that Simmons has just never really had as a strength. Last play, of course, is the one that got the most talked about here. This is the Shane Bichelle touchdown run. This is the one play that I think a lot of people questioned as far as with effort or the play that Simmons had as far as in the close. And I think that while I think there might be something to it, it does feel like that there is a little bit of context needed. We'll get to this next play as they're closing in. This was about maybe 10 minutes or so in game time after Isaiah Simmons had gotten flagged for the overly aggressive tackle, where he goes and he lowers his head, lowers his shoulder. I think that you could say that it was a shoulder that hit him, not the head, so that normally you would say that maybe that was a flag that shouldn't quite have been called. It's still a spot of being able to wrap up, getting your head up and hitting with the shoulder. That's something I think is a technique thing that's difficult to do, especially when you're that size. But it's part of where the NFL is now. So anyway, getting back to this play. So it's 3rd and 6. They're in the red zone. Shane Buechele has the ball. You can see that Isaiah Simmons is in the deep free safety spot. And you can see he gets his responsibilities here right. He shades a bit of the inside. You can see at least where most of the plays designed is flowing to the right. Buechele's getting a little bit of pressure. So he runs around the corner of the pocket. Simmons changes direction. You can say that, you know, he's able to flip his hips. He's in position. And I think the issue with this here, you can say, is the angle. As you can see right now, Simmons is looking right now at Buechele, knowing he's going to head for the pylon. You want to try to see if you can take the right angle toward him. And this is for one reason or another. Simmons just kind of runs toward it. And people say that, yeah, he could have laid him out. Didn't seem like they had the full hustle. Some of it, I think, is just if he had taken the right angle and gone a little bit more of the straightforward direction, you wouldn't have run into this type of situation at the pylon. I think he in his head, he's thinking, hey, I just went through an entire like 15-yard penalty that's here. I don't want to have to basically have this guy get laid out or have something happen to me, maybe get another flag that's tossed. But he does at least end up getting juked out right now because he's heading for the guy. He's not really able to close. And the guy gets a quick change of direction and basically runs in for the touchdown. Do you feel like that there was enough effort that was shown there for Simmons? Because part of what I feel like on that play was you can say the angle, you can say at least the effort. It does feel at least like he's playing a bit in slow motion out there for one reason or another.
Well, on that one, he so this is what I understand from like Simmons and what I was able to pick out, which is why I'm going to go over a philosophy that should have been picked up with the pick of Isaiah Simmons and understanding how to develop him. He does have a like he doesn't seem to have like somewhat of a mid gear. So if you see he's taking off full speed, but you also got to remember he has 240 pounds on like thin legs. Like we can all see him as like a he doesn't look like the prototypical linebacker. He looks more like a oversized defensive back, but he's still carrying a lot of weight. So he's taking off over here, of course. Once he's taking off, maybe he's thinking a tame. Maybe he's thinking, oh, hey, I'll get to the line so that way, you know, we can able to stop. Because if he takes the deep angle and he's wrong about it, then, you know, he surpasses him. Either way, but, like, go ahead and keep playing it, and then you'll see when he tries to slow down. Yep. Like he's going full speed. And he's like, no. And exactly. So he's like, oh, I'm 238 pounds of like, you know.
Yeah. You got to suddenly stop all of that at least. And that's one of the spots I think of, like, just like you said, with the pick or some of the players, I think part of where it comes down to, at least as far as with his athleticism, there's a lot, I think, that people said pre-draft that said, here are all the different perks and benefits of having a guy who can be able to be on the edge, be able to have some of that straight line speed, who can blitz really well, having some of that closing speed. I think we've been able to see in coverage when he's able to kind of turn and get into a good position to break up some deep passes, he's got a lot of the length to do that. We started to see, I think, some of the places like that. But in a case like this, like, I think one thing that we forget about is he didn't run the 3-cone drill at the combine to at least show like that change of direction. And so, like you said, it's a combination of who he is, adapting and playing to those strengths, but also at some cases, like when you're going to be talked about as a guy who's going to be a defensive back and you're having all of that size and that weight, if you're not able to kind of attack or hit the same way that Cam Chancellor would, and you're not having the fleet of foot to quickly change direction or be able to adjust, it's really hard to find a role in the NFL. That's just one of the things that unfortunately is the case of with Clemson's defense in the final year that he was on that team. They kind of tailored a role that was perfect for him to kind of be able to drop back or go out and hunt quarterbacks. And it was a spot where it was kind of like they built the defense for him and his strengths first, then built around it. And I think it's shown at least that at some places at the college level, we've seen that been able to be good. So far at the NFL level, it's really going to be interesting. We've seen him being used on the edge with the Cardinals, seen him used at safety, used him as linebacker. At some point, it just gets to a spot at least where I think the issue with Simmons has never been necessarily the player or the talent, but Cardinals drafted him 8th overall, and that's been where the expectations of that of superstardom, I think, has been a huge portion of just those expectations. And we'll hope that he can at least delight for a team like the Giants. He's on the last year of his deal. It's going to be interesting just to see, because like you said, he's one of those players a lot of Cardinals fans have been rooting for, who I've been rooting for, to be able to see if they can get it figured out someday. And I think we've been able to see him develop into a solid player. It's just unfortunately not been that stardom or superstardom, I think, that we had all hoped that he would be, this bigger Tyrann Mathieu, or having another, you know, type of Buda Baker on the field, making those linebacker type of plays. It just hasn't come to fruition, and the Cardinals moved on.
Yeah. So, like, with him, his strengths was just, this is how I describe him. He's like DK Metcalf, just as a defender. You know, DK Metcalf didn't run the three-cone drill, and of course that dropped the stock. And because of the fact that, like, you know, these type of players that have like a higher center of gravity, you've seen it so many times before. You've seen him get like slip, lose his footing, and get turned around, which is why I always question, why was he played so much in the slot last year? Kind of funny enough, playing off ball in the slot actually led him to have like the second highest grade coverage wise. And I saw it mostly because of the fact that, like, he was 7 yards off the ball of scrimmage. So if they try to make the moves, like, you know, slot receivers try to make the moves off the line of scrimmage, well, he's not there to press you. So he's waiting for you to declare, right, and then he's able to flip his hips. But you're right. Like, flipping his hips have always been an issue. So that was a side of concern, that if he had to do that, he had to switch his hips around and then carry that weight. And I do see that there's some like plays where he kind of should have been in the right spot, like with that Travis Kelsey, you know, passing. Like maybe he's trying to play contain. Maybe he just saw it as a, like, hey, Patrick Mahomes is known for taking off, but he's also known for passing. So the fact that Travis Kelsey was able to slip under like pretty much all our defenders, that is a situation where I think of like moving him around so much was the issue, because when you move them from
detriment,
when you move them from one position to another, they have different responsibilities, they have different keys, and they have different reads that they have to go over. So every single time it changed, which is why, like, you're right, we drafted him, we didn't have a plan for him. If we would have drafted him, had a plan, and put him in that floaty dimebacker / linebacker safety position, where you take a lot of coverage responsibilities off of him, and you have him kind of freelance, be the hunter, the guy that like closes out, you know, sacks for you know, the defensive line, then that would have been perfect. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case with us. So now with the what I predict is, with Wink Martindale, with the type of fronts that he uses him in, he's just gonna have him as a headhunter. So
Situational pass rusher who can still drop back a little bit without losing everything in coverage, I think will be a great fit for him. We're getting near the end of our showtime here, so I did want to at least say, you've already mentioned at least Toon versus Dobbs. I think you got one more play at least that you wanted to show on Clayton Toon, if we want to get that pulled up. I feel like ultimately at the end of the day that I agree is that maybe you get a better chance to win week one with a veteran who's not making their first start as a rookie on the road against a Washington defense. But at the end of the day, it does feel like that if you're going to be playing Clayton Toon for a lot longer and you want him to develop into being a long-term backup, you're going to want to at least see growth from him. And like you said, I think we did see some of that growth during the Vikings game in the final preseason game for the Cards.
Mm-hmm. So I love this throw. This is to the tight end, Whitehart, who's lined up just outside of Greg Dortch right here. So he's not particularly in the slot. He's a number two to the field side. So what I like right here is how he maintains his vision down the field and delivers a strike. Of course, Whitehart gets blown up at the end of this play, but he hangs on to this ball. But this really like kind of set the tone for me, because as you can see, he's just hanging in the pocket. So he's allowing the pressure. He's trying to feel the pressure. That's what they say about quarterbacks. Try to feel the pressure. You're not going to see it, but you know, like, hey, you got some timing where you have to get rid of the ball. He has his eyes downfield, just keeps his eyes right here on Whitehart. You have
finds the soft spot in the zone. Great job by Blake Whitehart, where you can see how they've got a couple of guys in that zone coverage, the free safety. He just kind of is able to keep running his route, get right into that spot where he's got inside leverage on the guy who's covering him. Like you said, great play overall, great ball, and you're able to see a great pickup for the Cards.
Yeah, this one got me excited. And, of course, let me just show that play action just really quick, just as a play action, because this one really gets me like excited about this whole new philosophy. So I believe it's this one. And it doubles up as a good Greg Dortch like catch, because we all love Greg Dortch. Mm-hmm. We all love him.
Yep, there's that long scissors concept that you have there is beautiful right there. You get to see how the man coverage, once they have that there, mixes it up. At least he's able to get wide open. And I believe that's a corner. Let me simple check if that's a corner route. See, I'm still working on my football terminology for the most part of being able to get that. But at least it's like the corner post is one of those types of plays. It's great, like you saw, as far as the protection. Because even with a guy who's got the area that's there, you still have the offensive line ready to protect, kind of push him out of the way of the quarterback, and the ball at least maybe a little bit late of a throw. But otherwise, like you said, it's a spot throw, and he gets that right to the spot it needs to be.
Yeah, so they put this DB in conflict, which was supposed to clear out the route that was running across the field over here. I believe it was like a extended dig route, I guess you can kind of say.
Whitehart's wide open at least, but they're able to take that route because the defender, like you said, went and covered that route.
Conflict.
Yeah, exactly.
He had to make him choose. So he was basically reading this number 23 right here. If he went to cover the deep route, then he's throwing to Dortch. If he comes down with Dortch, then he's throwing deep. But yeah, yep.
And it's great play design too. Great play design to be able to get it where you've got two options on either side of the field. You can either hit the tight end is more of the short route. You also have the long route at least that's available. And I think that's at least one of the signs that's really cool as far as with seeing some of the stuff in this coaching staff and how they'll attack. As we wrap up and get ready to head out here, what are the two things, I guess, for this season you would say that you're excited for? And then what's one thing maybe that you're concerned for as far as with the Cards as we enter 2023? And week one is just a week away, it seems like, at least we're out of football by the next time, at least, that I think I'll have this podcast.
Well, I'm excited for my two picks on one Michael Wilson and Keitro Clark on defense, watching these guys grow and develop and hopefully become like starters, and even who knows, maybe even Pro Bowlers down the line. Just trying to watch to see like just how the scheme on both offense and defense changes the entire, like, you know, the philosophy going forth. You know, you have different philosophies coming in, so we're always interested to see what kind of changes that would come to. One of the things that I'm concerned about is just the negative news around the Cardinals. As we know, we've been dragged through the mud. It's just been bad. Like, we always expect like something to come out. We just heard the thing that we already knew when it came to the burner phone. So I just really hope that culture wise, this heads to a positive direction. That's my only hope when it comes to, like, because I'm not looking forward to any more news about the Cardinals. I would think the next thing would come out, they would say like, oh, Michael Bidwell or Steve Keim, or, you know, so-and-so, you know, like, I'm just done with the negativity with the Cardinals outside of the football field, of course.
Absolutely. I think for me, the biggest thing I think I'm more, I don't know if I'd say excited for, but it feels very much like this is a team that you, like you said, like the Lions, you want to see them at least be able to continue to play hard. You want them to be able to at least maybe knowing that they're not going to win a bunch of games. I think that clarity on the team's future at quarterback is the biggest thing I think that I'm looking forward to, because I think by the end of the season, we'll probably know whether the Arizona Cardinals are moving forward with Kyler Murray or if they're going to be moving in a different direction. And that's something that's been talked about even since he came into the league. It felt like that if he's supposed to be the guy, we're entering his fifth year and there's questions. Some of that now we can look back, and I want to be able to make sure we know, hey, this was a rough situation, a rough coaching staff. You finally maybe have adults that are like in charge overall, again, looking after his development. And then just seeing how he comes back off of the ACL. There's a lot of quarterbacks in their first year can have a lot of struggles. How do they adjust and utilize him? And even if it is a spot where he doesn't end up coming back, at least, or it takes longer than we think, at least to the most part, where it feels like things are already set, that's going to be another whole thing in itself. I think that right now we're just in that waiting period. Waiting for the Cardinals to be able to make that move, whether it's going to be in a positive direction or if we're going to be here, like, kind of seeing this team, you know, stay in the basement, but with or without hope. I think that's the biggest things fans want to have, is a bit of hope. It's start of the season. It's 0-0. Every team right now is the same record. We'll be here to, we'll be having other people on the Redbird Reboot podcast to cover some of this. Marcos, if you want to go ahead and plug some of the stuff that you've got or have written, at least, that'd be awesome.
Well, you can find me on X, actually just Twitter, at PancakeSoul. So basically just the name on the screen that you see just flipped over. And you should be able to, I believe that's my Twitter handle. I got to double check. But if not, then Blake Murphy already put a tweet out there and stuff. So he already tagged me in it. So that's where you can find me. You can also find me writing for AZ Sports Underground. And hopefully, you know, we'll be seeing more of this film study come across the, you know, like the community as a whole.
Absolutely. I think that'll be great. Yeah. And you can also, again, follow me at BlakeMurphy7 on Twitter. Make sure you follow, find all of our shows that we have on the Redbird Reboot. We'll be at revengeofthebirds.com. A lot of great writers, a lot of great content going on there. If you want to at least watch some of the video that we have for those, obviously you can find those accounts, or you can even go on YouTube now and be able to check out the Redbird Reboot for some of that film study. Hey, that's it for today's session. I'm Blake Murphy. Redbird Reboot is over. It's time to log off. Have a good one, Cardinals fans.